Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Jamie. To begin our broadcast, host Latara Smith talks with a family member of Alexis Mitchell, the 16-year-old girl killed on December 13th here in Kansas City. They will talk about the emotional and economic devastation wrought on this family. Then, host Keith Brownell talks with a group of activists that are trying to get the Franklin County Jail in Kansas to provide women in their custody the feminine hygiene products they need and other conditions in the jail. There will be no calendar of events today, but stay tuned for the 420 drug war news at the end of the broadcast. Now, here is Latara and her guest.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in. This is Latara Smith of the Casey Freedom Project, and this morning I am here with Keith Brownell. He's going to co-host the show with me this morning, and we're going to be focusing in on this situation that happened back on December 13th. There was a young lady by the name of Alexis Mitchell who was shot and killed in Kansas City, and Mrs. Mitchell's death came about as the result of teenagers having access to fire weapons. Keith, can you just real quick talk a little bit about the issue? I know back on September 15th in 2016, you know, they passed the law in reference to the weapon. Missouri changed the issue with the weapons. And actually, according to information that I received back on September 15th, 2016, Missouri joined some other states, okay? Idaho, West Virginia, and Mississippi, okay? And these are all states, including Missouri, that have adopted what they call permitless carry, okay, in 2016. Can you elaborate a little bit about what permitless carry is and how you think it has affected or will affect our community here in Kansas City, Missouri?
Well, I think what's really taking place is that they keep trying to sell this idea to people that the only way you can be safe is arming everybody in society with more and more guns. But what's really taking place is that these gun manufacturers and the National Rifle Association can make large campaign contributions to a lot of these politicians who are pushing to have these gun laws passed. Mm-hmm. And what they do is that they write the laws that they want the legislature to pass, and then they put them into effect. And there's no regard being given to the fact that the more guns you have in society are endangering people's lives.
Exactly. And how do you think that is going to affect with them issuing this permitless carry law for weapons here in the state of Missouri? How do you personally think that's going to affect our community here in Kansas City, Missouri?
Well, when you try to talk to people about guns, the first thing they think, or if you're not on board with these people that want to put guns out here in society and arm everybody, they think you're trying to take away their right to have a gun. We're not advocating that you take away everybody's right to own a gun. We're just advocating that you make some sensible laws that doesn't make it so easy for everybody to get their hands on a firearm.
Exactly.
You know, you got a lot of crazy people in this society. You got a lot of people who just don't know how to exercise good judgment and discipline. You can't put guns in everybody's hands and expect society to be safe. And we have a record homicide rate here in Kansas City this year. And I almost want to slap one of these politicians every time I hear them say something like, guns don't kill people, people kill people. You
right.
know, I mean, people can't kill people as effectively without guns as they can with guns. I mean, if you take all the guns out of society, you'll still have homicides, no doubt. You know, but it would be a lot less convenient than just simply picking up a firearm and pulling the trigger.
Exactly. And you said something, Keith, that I was just getting ready to touch base on, and that is the homicide rate here in Kansas City, Missouri. I think that we're at what now? Do you know the number?
145, I think.
145 people. And, you know, I've been in Kansas City for 6 years now, okay? And it seems like this last year, the murders have just, I mean, the numbers have just, like, exploded throughout the roof. And, you know, I don't find it, you know, I mean, I want to say it has something to do with this permitless carry law that they passed. As a matter of fact, you know, we have a 16-year-old girl, like I announced at the beginning of the show, who was shot, Alexis Mitchell, back on December 13th. And this young lady was 16 years old, very sweet young lady, attended school at Raytown South, had a very bright future ahead of herself. And that young lady, her family is now preparing to lay her to rest. And Alexis's death came about as the result of, from what I understand, from what I've been told, from speaking with family members, teenagers having access to a firearm. As a matter of fact, we should have, is Mrs. Mitchell on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Ms. Mitchell, first of all, okay, everyone, I have Lisa Strong Mitchell, who is the mother of Alexis Mitchell, the young lady that you just heard me speak about that just, I mean, wow, just lost her life over foolishness, okay? Foolishness and easy access to fire weapons, okay, is what caused this young lady to no longer be here on the face of this earth with us. Lisa, I first want to let you know, myself from the Casey Freedom Project, Keith Brown L., and on behalf of all of the staff here at KKFI, we most definitely send out our condolences and you know, let you know that we are praying for you and your family. And we want to thank you for taking the time, despite all of the trials and tribulations and everything that you're dealing with right now, to come on the show and speak to us, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Now, can you tell me how Alexis's death has affected you and your family?
It has affected my family. This is so traumatic, and it's, this has been a truly, truly loss for us, financially, emotionally, mentally draining. And I wouldn't wish this up on anybody.
And I don't know if you can talk about much, but what is law enforcement saying about, you know, what has happened revolving around Alexis's death? Where are they at in their investigations?
They have someone in custody. They're still investigating from the last time I spoke with the detective. So we're just pretty much at a standstill right now as far as any updates.
Okay. Okay. Well, I can tell. I know it's a struggle, Lisa, because I myself have lost a daughter. So I know that this is a very, very trying time for you and your family. Like you said, not just emotionally, but also financially. Because, I, you know, everyone, you know, when you lose someone, you have the burden of having to put them away. Okay. And to what I understand, there was no life insurance policy in place for Alexis, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Now, you guys have a GoFundMe page out. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And let me see. Is that, okay, the GoFundMe page is out in social media. And, you know, I'm asking anyone that's listening if you could help this family to come up with some expenses to bury this young lady. Because the family is solely depending on funds that are raised through GoFundMe, the GoFundMe page that they have presented. You can go on. I know that Channel 41 did a feature on Alexis the other night. And on their website on Channel 41, they actually have a link to Alexis Mitchell's GoFundMe page that her mother has created in an attempt to raise funds to be able to cover the burial. Lisa, do you feel that with these gun laws that we have that you know, came about, you know, a little over a year ago, you know, where they made it so easy for people to access fire weapons. You know, do you think that that played a part in Alexis's death?
Yes, I really do. And I feel that us as parents need to be more involved in our children's life. We need to, if you have to go through their phone, if you have to go into their room and, you know, sneak around and look to see, you know, what they're doing. Because a lot of these children are just out there in the street, in the streets, or basically raising them. And, you know, you have you don't have positive role models anymore for these children.
Exactly. Because Alexis was just going over to visit a friend, correct?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Now, and I want to make it clear to everyone, Alexis was not involved in any gangs. Alexis was not a juvenile in the system. She was not a young lady with any type of criminal history. She was a very nice young lady that attended school, had an excellent GPA, was very active in her community. She was very active in various extracurricular activities at school, very well known at school, very well liked at school, not just by her peers, but also by staff. Okay. So I don't want anyone to try to turn it around and say, oh, she must have been associated with something negative, because that's not the case. That's not the case. Keith, you have something you want to share?
Yes, I want to say that I acknowledge that a young woman who was involved in all of these positive activities.
Yes.
That's a compound tragedy when somebody like that loses their life.
Exactly.
But even if you have a criminal record, you've been involved in some type of misdealings with the system, or you've had a troubled life, that doesn't entitle other people to kill you just simply because you haven't lived a lifestyle that's in accord with what most people think is a productive life. We have to put emphasis on people losing their lives and not what kind of life they lived while they was
right,
alive.
Right. I agree with you.
We got hundreds of young kids just like this young woman here, losing their lives out here on these streets daily.
Exactly.
And this situation about saying that only people who don't have criminal records can buy guns, and you have to be approved by the whatever process you go through, or after they do background checks and all that, that's not keeping the guns out of the hands of people who will go out and commit crimes. It's not keeping the guns out of the hands of people who accidentally shoot somebody. The statistics show that if you go out and you buy a gun, that more than likely that gun is going to be used to end up hurting somebody, injuring somebody in your household, more likely than it'll be used to shoot a stranger. Now,
right.
Now it's not even simply a matter about guns being confined to the household. You got people who can ride around with guns in their cars. You got people who can walk around out in broad, well, theoretically, people can, well, you know, if certain people try to walk around out in society with handguns, i.e. black people, it's going to be a problem. You'll get stopped by the police. They'll want to know where you're going. Why. But I'm saying other people are allowed to walk around with handguns in broad daylight out here. And that's just crazy. We back to the days of like we living in the Wild West somewhere.
Right. Right. Well, you know, I wanted to bring out the point about Alexis not being involved in any negative extracurricular activity, because so many times I see people write off murders of our youth by saying, oh, they were gang affiliated, or you know, and that, you know, whether they were gang affiliated or not, it is a youth's life that we are losing.
Right.
So I wanted to make it clear to everyone, here's a youth, you know, that had nothing to do with anything negative. This was the sweetest young lady. You couldn't ask for a better, polite, most, I personally knew this little girl.
Right.
I mean, so if I'm on here saying she was polite, mannerable, just very well spoken, you can best believe 100% that's how this young lady was. Lisa, we had one of our local organizations call in. Are you still with us with Ms. Mitchell?
Yes.
Okay. One, and I want you to take this number down. And we just had a call in. Corey's Network just contacted us, okay? And they are an organization. They will help to cover burial costs for individuals, you know, youth and things as such. And they called in, and they're saying that they most definitely want you to contact them, and they're going to be able to assist you. And I want to give you their number over the air.
Okay.
It's 816. 834-9161. And I know the individual that runs this organization. They're wonderful people, and I highly suggest that you reach out to them so that they're able to assist you at this time of need. And then I also want to extend a thanks to the individuals that run Corey's Network, and thank you so much for calling into the show today and reaching out to assist this family. You know, that's what it takes. I've been telling everyone, you know, as a community, it is very important that we come together. You know, when you have unity in a community, you have power. Amen. When you have unity in a community, you have power. And that's, you know, even some of these judicial issues and things that we're dealing with here in our community, from the prosecutor's office to the police department to things that are going on with the jail. You know, if we as a community could come together and unite, we could stop a lot of this stuff that is going on, things that we consider, things that not just we consider that are unfair, but things that we know are unfair that is going on within our judicial system here in Jackson County, that's going on within our local Jackson County jail. That's going on within our local Kansas City Police Department. So for those of you that are listening, if you guys, we have so many, Keith, would you agree with me on this? We have so many different social activist groups. Tell me if you agree with me.
Yes.
Different, and you've got tons of little bitty ones here and here and here and here and there. But if those little bitty ones could all come together, put whatever differences aside, come together and begin to address these issues in our city, that is when I believe Kansas City, Missouri will stand and be able to do something to change the current state that we're in.
And a lot of times it's the people who have been victims of these type of tragedies who have to come together and put pressure on the politicians. You have to put pressure on some of these communities. You got a lot of community activist groups. Now, it's not a lot of them, but you have some of them. They have their own agendas.
Yes.
They're not interested in trying to do what's beneficial to the community. You know, they're interested in grant money. They're interested in getting personal recognition for themselves. Like some of the groups that I work, we don't work with, we don't care if we get the recognition. We just want
exactly
to bring about changes.
Change.
We don't want to wake up every morning and hear about people getting shot and killed on the street.
Exactly. Bring about change and bring about awareness, because you have to bring about the awareness to bring about the change.
Exactly.
You know, so.
Exactly. You know, I mean, and the last thing any parent expects is that, you know, you got a 18 and 19-year-old child. You don't expect to have to bury that child before you pass away from this earth. You know, and a lot of times that's probably why a lot of parents don't have insurance on their kids, because they make basically have emphasis on trying to ensure the lives of older people who are closer to passing away. But you cannot live in a society that allows this much gun violence to take place in it and assume that anybody is safe from becoming a victim of a tragedy.
Exactly. Lisa, is there anything else that you want to say? Because we're not too far away from coming close to the end of the show. And Keith and I can kind of ramble on about issues, you know. We're so passionate about what we do. Is there anything else that you want to say that you want to make the community aware of concerning your precious daughter's death?
I just would like to thank each and every one that has called, sent texts, pray for us. We have such a big support system, family and friends, and I just want to let everybody know that we really appreciate you guys, and it's making us strong to have this support around us during this difficult time.
Right.
And like I said, we as parents need to be more involved in our children. You know, if your children get upset because you ask them where you going, who you with, then let them get upset.
Right.
Let them know that you love them. Hug them, kiss them. But, you know, you got to stay being nosy is what I want to call it. It's being nosy and being more involved with your children's life, because no one wants to bury their child.
Exactly. And, you know, I want to make a quick announcement to everyone. Not just is the GoFundMe page for Alexis Mitchell posted on Channel 41's website, it is also posted on the website of KKFI, okay? So you can look on our website here, and you would be able to, there's a link there to the GoFundMe account, and we're asking everyone to please assist the family, because they are, I think, about $3,000 short of having what they need to bury Alexis, okay? Well, Lisa, I tell you what, we're going to be following this situation, okay? And we're most definitely here to assist you in anything that we can possibly do. And, you know, we just pray that you stay encouraged and just know that everything will be okay. And we thank you so much for calling in and sharing, you know, Alexis's story with us. And you know, preferably we'll get some listeners here that will reach out and help for us to, you know, conquer this last couple of thousand dollars that we need to get Alexis put away. Lisa, you have a blessed day. Okay, I know that you have to get on, but okay. Thank you once again so much for calling.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. Bye-bye. You know, Keith, it's rough. I know it's rough for Miss Mitchell, and it's rough for her family. You know, I can't even imagine, you know, just my daughter going around the corner to visit a friend. Mm-hmm. And she never comes back home. I can imagine how it felt for Mrs. Mitchell to have to make that decision to remove her daughter off life support because the injuries were so bad that Alexis wasn't going to be able to recover from that. You know, I know it's rough.
And one of the things that's really frustrating is that you hear these politicians, you hear these prosecutors, they make all this noise about crime that's taking place out on the street and the violence. But when you ask them, why do you contribute to the violence by making guns so accessible out here in society? Because most of these people that's making all this noise about crime, they support this type of gun legislation. They don't have an answer for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know what the situation that we're talking about here today is keeps occurring over and over and over again.
Right, it does. It does.
You know, and I have to think about even when I think about this young lady losing her life, and I think about the grief that her family members are going through. I mean, you got hundreds of other cases where the same thing has happened over and over again. We as a community, we have to come together.
Exactly.
We have to figure out who's working in our best interest and who's not. And those people that are not working in our interest, we have to set them down and shut them up.
Exactly.
And get them out of these decision making positions where they can make judgments about things that's going to impact us.
Exactly.
And then they go home and they live in their suburbs where they have the policemen patrolling their neighborhoods. And we don't have that in our neighborhoods. We have to live in the inner cities. You know, we don't live in gated communities, you know, where we have the extra protection that a lot of people have, you know, that make these decisions. We have to get these people out of our affairs.
Exactly. I agree. I agree with you. You know, it's a tough situation. It's a very tough situation. And sometimes, you know, people don't feel it until it actually happens with them, you know. People don't feel it until it actions to them. And, you know, but I can say this. We're going to be working with the mother and to put together the Alexis Mitchell Foundation so that we can begin to advocate, you know, in Alexis's precious memory to start addressing these issues. And I agree with you in reference to those legislators and things that are signing off on these things. You would be amazed to know who supported that. You understand what I'm saying? Who supported the passing of that law, you know, permitless carry here in the state of Missouri?
Well, some of the politicians that did support this, and I have to say this in all fairness, they did it out of fear. Because a lot of politicians, or they have this fear that you'll get voted out of office because they have, you know, when people come out and they take a stance against things like this, they get bombarded with all type of negative propaganda about this person wants to take away your right to own a gun and all this type of stuff. And people don't try to exercise their judgment. So a lot of people, they go along with it. We lost the whole entire Republican Congress back in the 80s because they were trying to push gun legislation that made it more
right.
difficult to get guns out on the street. And that's reverberated all through the political process ever since then.
And I totally agree with you, because even when it comes to fighting wrongful convictions, you know, some people that are in a position to stand up and fight and voice opinions, make a difference and bring awareness and actually say, hey, why is this so? They don't do it because of just what you said, that fear of being moved out of office.
It reminds me of something that I heard Reverend Jesse Jackson say one time. He said, we have to start thinking about the next generation and stop thinking about the next election.
True. That's so very true. Very well said. That's a wonderful, wonderful thing for us to end on, because we are actually out of time. But I want to thank everyone for tuning in today. And please remember, those of you that who can help, please go to the KKFI website and make a donation to Alexis Mitchell's GoFundMe account. Thank you for listening in today. Everyone have a blessed day.
C.
Several months ago, a serious problem came to the attention of a group of concerned citizens here in Kansas City. Female prisoners are being denied feminine hygiene items while confined in the Franklin County, Kansas jail. A number of phone calls were made to the staff at the jail, to Franklin County Sheriff Jeff Richards and State Representative Blaine Finch. The staff, which the callers were able to make contact with, were rude, contemptuous, and uncooperative, as would be expected. Sheriff Richards made a visit to the residence of one of the callers for some unspecified reason, and Representative Finch never bothered to respond. This morning on Jaws of Justice Radio, I'm going to be talking about this with Mr. Jack Howard and a woman known as Ruth, who wishes to remain anonymous for obvious reasons. My name is Keith Brownio. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio. Good morning.
Hey, Keith.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Okay, now, could you, one of you, tell me a little bit about how this problem came to your attention?
Yeah, Keith. So my wife was going to the store one day, and this is probably back early September, and she ran into an old friend that she hadn't seen in a while, and they started talking, and she learned from her friend that her friend had just gotten out of the jail there in Franklin County, and she went into detail. This is more than just a conversation you normally have at a store, but she was telling her, you know, she was in there over the weekend, and she was telling my wife she didn't have access to, they didn't give her a bra, and then she was describing what she'd saw as far as some of the other female inmates in the jail not being given feminine hygiene products. We can, of course, get into the details of that here in a bit, but needless to say, I guess I became concerned. I reached out to some friends that I have here in Kansas City that are activists, and we started talking about what we could do to maybe change things there.
And Ruth, how did you become involved in this situation?
Oh, well, I'm a good friend of Jake's, and, you know, he let me know that this was going on, particularly in a county that he's familiar with, a county that he would consider he has some community, sense of community with. And so when he let me know that was going on, you know, I talked to some of the other folks that I was involved with, some of the folks I know who are particularly interested in the alleviation of the misery that prisoners often experience, and inmates and things like that. And so, yeah, he let me know what was going on. And naturally, like, my response as someone with a uterus, I was like, well, that's super unacceptable. That's not okay. And so we decided, hey, well, we need to talk to some folks. We need to figure out what's going on. And so that's just what we did. A few folks from Kansas City.
Okay, now what specific feminine hygiene products are the women being denied?
Then this is just a report from my wife's friend that she had talked to who observed this. So there was one female inmate that was in jail, and she was asking for a tampon or a hygienic pad, and she didn't have one, and she was menstruating, and the jailers allowed her to actually bleed through her clothing, and over the intercom, they were humiliating her by basically telling her that she should have saved money in her canteen fund to purchase the pads. And this went on for a while. After they had let her bleed through her clothing, they did bring a new change of clothing, but scolded her for soiling the ones that she had on, and then did provide her with a pad to use with the new clothing.
But that was just simply a one-time occasion, right?
That was a one-time occasion. So when my wife's friend had saw this, she started asking other female inmates that were in there at the time if this was, a one-time deal or if this was, and they said, oh, yeah, they expect you to buy the pads with your own funds. And, you know, they make it seem like, you are dirty when you don't have money to pay for the pads. So it was a policy, and my wife's friend herself wasn't giving a bra for 3 days that she was in prison. She wasn't menstruating, so she didn't experience the feminine hygiene problem, but she did experience having to go 3 days without proper undergarments.
Okay, now the woman that was menstruating in the jail, do you know how long she had been in the jail?
I'm not sure on that. I think she'd been in there for longer than my wife's friend, certainly. So I think, more than 3 days for sure.
Are the prisoners in the jail given any money? I'm saying, like, if they're indigent, they don't have money to buy these type of items, or are there any funds placed on their account, or they have, do they have an indigency policy at the institution?
No, it's my understanding that they don't. And this all, you know, secondhand information just from my wife's friend who had looked into it. But no, she wasn't given a bra because she was unable to make contact with family or friends to bring her money that weekend. So because she didn't have, you know, somebody to put money in her account, she wasn't able to get an undergarment. So I would assume it's the same with the maxi pads as well.
Okay, Ruth, now tell us about the other people that became concerned about this. What kind of role did they play?
Well, for one, we were interested in figuring out, you know, who are, like, the key players in what gets, you know, what gets established and asserted as far as, like, the rules and mandates and regulations in the Franklin County correctional facility. And so first we started out by figuring out the contact information for State Representative Blaine Finch. And so we followed that lead first. We tried to figure out what was going on there. And after several attempts at, you know, leaving voicemails, not only on his office number, but also his secretary's office number with no response, we decided, okay, well, then maybe we should be contacting the people who are actually at Franklin County's detention center. We should be contacting those front desk people who are paid to answer the phones. They're paid by taxpayers to do that.
Right.
And so we tried that with not just similar luck, but actually some retaliation from these people who are quite literally paid to answer the phones.
And what kind of retaliation are we talking about?
Well, one night, Ruth and I were having dinner in Lawrence on a little sidewalk cafe. And we decided we were going to make a call. Personally, neither of us had made a call up to the point. Other people had made a call. So I had actually picked up my phone and dialed the Franklin County correction or the jail. And I got through to a corrections officer, and I inquired about, you know, the policy as far as feminine hygiene products, and expressed my concern. I was hung up on. And about a minute or two later, I get a call back from that same correction officer, who was a female. She asked who I was. I told her my name. You know, I told her I lived in Ottawa, which is the town where the jail is located, and that I was calling because I was concerned. She was saying that I was making harassing phone calls and this or that. So anyhow, the call ended after I told her my name and, you know, why I was calling. And then Ruth called back and actually spoke to her, raising the same concerns, and then also raised the concerns, you know, that I was, you know, it was kind of weird that a corrections officer would call someone back after hanging up on them.
Especially because she referred to this harassment or whatever, which is, I mean, by definition, you're, like, as a taxpayer, you are paying her salary to do that job. Well, she was incapable of doing that job because she took it personally. She called you back on your personal cell phone. She asked you personal information. You don't pay her salary to do those things. You pay her salary for her to answer questions from concerned citizens about the Franklin County Jail. So, that really struck a nerve, and that was really concerning, because if this is the sort of thing that she's willing to do from, rather, if this is the sort of thing that the corrections officers at the Franklin County Jail are willing to do, calling back from the Franklin County Jail phone number, I mean, you know, who knows what they're doing off the record, basically.
Okay, now who was it that got a visit from the sheriff?
A couple days later, I think it was actually the next week, because this happened on a weekend. So early that next week, I believe it was on a Tuesday, the following Tuesday, I was out. I work for a nonprofit in Ottawa. I do a lot of food programs, food distributions. I also provide after-school meals to three different sites in town. I was delivering meals to one of the schools, and I was getting ready to leave, and a little boy who's a neighbor of mine came up to me and said, "Hey, I just want to let you know you had a sheriff's deputy. He didn't say it was actually the sheriff's. I'm not sure if it was the sheriff or deputy. He said a sheriff is how he, you know, a little boy, came by. And he said, he asked if you and your wife lived in this house. And I told him, yeah. And he said, hey, just let them know that I dropped by. So I don't know if it's related to this. I'm pretty clean otherwise, so I assume it was. I didn't call in to inquire because, you know, it kind of made me a little nervous. I'm not used to having cops just randomly stop by my house. So right. I assumed it was due to this, and it was a form of, since they didn't leave a card or anything, they just had this little boy directed. I assumed it was a kind of a form of intimidation, saying, hey, we know you've called in. Now, it may have been something more benign than that, but that's how I took it at least.
Well, in these days where you have so much controversy going on about the way certain law enforcement officials interpret their ability to enforce the law, I think you probably were justified in making that assumption that it could have been intimidation. Now, was there any attempt by anybody, or do you know of any attempt that was made to contact the county health department on these issues?
Not that I'm aware of. I don't believe so.
I think that'd be a great next step, personally. I know that when we were contacting Blaine Finch and Associates, we made it clear, you know, that not only is denying feminine hygiene products to people whose bodies they can't control whether or not they're menstruating, that not only is that, well, rude, it's also, that's a health issue, that's a violation of human rights, that's a violation of the Eighth Amendment of the United States Constitution, so.
Exactly. Now, have you took the time to check around to other facilities that house female correctional facilities that to me they jails, but correctional facilities, mm-hmm. we'll give them that house females? Do you know what their policies are in regards to providing feminine hygiene products?
We know that federally, and this was this year, I guess, enacted, but federal prisons and correctional facilities mm-hmm. are required to provide hygiene products to their inmates free of charge. So they recognize that this is an issue. I mean, and also, you know, we have conversations on the outside about like feminine taxes, so to speak. We talk about how it's ridiculous that something that the human body naturally does is, you know, met with this consumerism culture in which we have to pay exorbitant amounts just to remain hygienic, essentially. And so on the outside, we've got different non-for-profits and different organizations who make feminine hygiene products more accessible because they recognize it's an issue. And so, you know, I think that it's a no-brainer to connect that to the human beings who are inside of these jails.
You're listening to Jaws of Justice Radio, 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. My name is Keith Brown-Ill, and I'm in the studio this morning with Mr. Jack Howard and a lady named Ruth, who we are having a discussion about the denial of feminine hygiene products in the Franklin County Jail. Now, there was also some discussion about, I think when we had a conversation earlier about an effort that was made to try to donate some of these products to the jail. Somebody called and asked, what was the response on that?
It was actually my wife's friend who brought this whole issue up. When she was getting released from jail, she had talked to the jailers there, the corrections officers, I guess, about she was interested in making a donation because she felt, well, maybe they're not providing pads because they just don't have the funds. You know how government's cutting back in Kansas and stuff. Maybe I'll donate. And she's in a position she felt she could do that. And she felt bad for the women that remain in jail. And they told her, no, we don't, you know, they have to be a certain kind of product. And they, you know, there's all these hoops you got to jump through to get a donation. We basically don't take donations. And, you know, it's, you know, these women need to pay for what they're getting. Mm-hmm. And I guess it almost seemed like it was more of a part of their philosophy on teaching people that they need to, you know,
punishing them for
breaking the law. Yeah, punishing them, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, which is interesting because the nonprofit I work for, I actually get a lot of stuff from the stores around the area, mostly food, but sometimes I get a lot of non-food items. Sometimes I do get feminine hygiene products. And I usually donate those to domestic violence shelters, things like that. I don't really think they need donations, but I think they have the funds to pay for it. But, I mean, I want to see the women. I just want to make sure that they're taken care of. So if we could get donations in there, it would be great.
Well, how long have you lived down in this county where this problem developed?
I've lived there most of my life. I'm 40 years old, and I've moved away a couple different points in time. I was in the Army for a while. I've also lived in Lawrence and in Georgia for a couple years here or there, but most of my life is spent in Ottawa. I'm pretty ingrained in the community. My mom is a teacher. She taught school for 45 years and retired just a couple years ago. My grandfather actually was a county commissioner there for many years. My father worked for the city. He passed away last year, but he worked for the city most of his life as a utilities director. I know personally Blaine Finch, the representative. I went to school with him. I've reached out to him on this issue and other issues and haven't gotten any kind of response. So I'd imagine somebody with my type of, you know, connections to the community is not getting answers. It's a big issue they probably don't want being brought forth is what I'm thinking.
Now, what is the mentality of the people down there in the county where you live in? Is that just typically the attitude people have toward?
It's a rural county. 25,000 folks live there. I would say, yeah, Kansas, they lean very conservative. I mean, most folks do there. You know, there's this idea of if you're in jail that you need to be punished. It's you've done something wrong, and that, you know, jail is a way to teach you not to do those things again. So, but there are a lot of compassionate folks. So I think oftentimes the loudest ones are the ones that are probably leaning that way.
Okay, now for people who jail itself should be the punishment, but for those who might want to get involved in this cause that both of you have taken up, is there some kind of way they can contact other people and get some information out or, you know, participate in the effort that you got going to bring some more attention to this cause?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that I would suggest is reaching out on Facebook to the Kansas City IWW page. Stands for Industrial Workers of the World. And you'll be able to recognize this page as the right one because it will have a black cat as the logo. But yeah, if you send us a message, one of us will get back to you, and we'll let you know a little bit more about just how to get involved with this cause. Also, if people, have suggestions about how to go about this, maybe someone else has had a similar experience, and we're always looking for new and positive and effective ways to enact change. So, please reach out to us.
Now, Ruth, are you a member of any other organizations, or do you do any kind of community work? And if so, what kind?
For the sake of this interview, I'm only going to align myself with the Kansas City branch of the Industrial Workers of the World. However, I do a bit of other work, so if folks wish to reach out to me personally, again, you can ask for Ruth on the Kansas City IWW page, and I'll get back to you.
Have you encountered harassment and intimidation in some of the work that you've done as far as being a community activist?
Oh, certainly. Oh, yeah, definitely. And especially being a woman as well. It's like, I'm spoken to oftentimes with an air of indignation, with, a bit of, people assuming that I couldn't know what I'm talking about, people assuming I wouldn't have any idea how to enact change. And so, yeah, I'd say that I've experienced, and also particularly with the Franklin County jail, I've experienced a lot of retaliation, folks saying incredibly cruel things when they answer the phone as corrections officers.
And I think earlier when we talked, you said that some of the staff members were trying to inquire about who made the complaints and for the purpose of trying to focus on the people that might be funneling information out of the institution. Can you talk a little bit about that?
One of the first things that happened after, or rather I should say it happened in phases, when, the first couple times that we called to get more information about what was going on, we called the corrections officers. They responded by hanging up. Then we moved on to a phase where people started asking questions, who are you? That was the first one. And we responded with, you know, we're concerned citizens. We're taxpayers. We pay your salary, and we'd like for you to do your job so that you can provide, you know, you can provide for the human rights of the humans that you have incarcerated. Then it went from them asking us who we were to who told you that? Who gave you that complaint, you know? Which basically is, I'm sure that that would be used as a means to intimidate and maybe even retaliate against the inmates who then made those complaints, or were rather subjected to those tortures, those cruel and unusual punishments.
But there never was any denial by the staff members there that these practices are being carried out.
Other than vague statements of like they get what they need, there was no denial. Now, that's one statement that we heard over and over, is they are provided what they need. When asked directly on the hygiene, they would just repeat that over and over. There's some information that I have to leave out about the person that was incarcerated there. I'm a little vague in how I'm detailing all this because I don't want that person to be identified. But there's a lot more information that that I'm aware of that I'm unable to really vocalize here.
One other thing that was kind of striking about the whole situation was there was only one corrections officer answering the phone who had a uterus. There was only one person who was a woman and identified as a woman and also had a uterus who was answering that phone. It was like at first we were only getting the men answering, and of course they were a little bit indignant about their responses, a little bit not understanding of the situation, the severity of it, the hygienic crisis that is that situation. But then it was almost like they grabbed the one female coworker they had, and they said, "Hey, you know what? We need you to answer these phones because we can't do it. They won't listen to us," sort of thing.
So there's only one female working in the jail?
That's my understanding, that there's only one guard or it's a female. Yes.
And we're almost out of time, but I got one more question I want to ask. Have you received any other complaints from the prisoners, female or otherwise, about how people are treated in the jail when they're incarcerated there?
Well, we are trying, actually. In the past, the Franklin County Jail has published a roster online on their website. We try to get a hold of this roster because we're trying to reach out with communication to women that are still incarcerated there to find out, have things gotten better, have they remained the same, or have they gotten worse? Because that's important to us, because we don't want to push this issue if we're finding out, you know, things are getting worse. Our main concern is to make conditions better for the women that are in that jail.
Exactly.
But that roster is no longer online, and told that it's not public information. Considering maybe filing a Freedom of Information Act request there, just to find out if it truly is public information.
I certainly appreciate you coming by to give the public this information, and please continue your work. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us, Keith.
Thank you.
It's the 420 Drug War News. A lot of folks don't realize that besides cultural baggage and maybe the 420 Drug War News, the Drug Truth Network also produces a weekly half-hour program called Century of Lies. For the last couple of years, it has been produced by my friend, my ally, the editor of Drug War Facts, Mr. Doug McVeigh. Hey, Doug, how you doing?
Hello, Dean. Good to talk to you. Doing well. How are you doing today?
I'm okay. Things are picking up, I guess, here in the city of Houston. I just did an interview with a couple of the past police chiefs, and they had high praise for the work that we've been doing. That's a sign of progress these days, isn't it?
I would say so. You've been doing a lot of good work. Houston's not exactly, how do I put this gently? It's not really, it doesn't really have that kind of stereotype image of being a progressive place. And you've managed to get people talking about drug policy and the futility of the drug war and actually looking at alternatives, because that last part, everybody talks about it. Everybody admits, yeah, you're right, drug war doesn't work. Yeah, I shouldn't call it a drug war. And then let's just keep on doing what we're doing. But you've actually got people talking about and doing some real reform. That's a heck of a thing.
Well, I appreciate that, Doug. And, you know, on a more massive scale, an international scale, we had a situation, I forget, 6-8 years back, where HSBC Bank was caught laundering over $100 million for, some of the drug cartels. And yet just more recently, we had the release of the Paradise Papers. Let's talk about that, what it means.
Sure. The International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, and you can find them, by the way, online at icij.org, is a tremendous organization. And one of the things that they have been doing has been collecting leaked documents, leaked information. People may remember a year or two ago something called the Panama Papers, when documents from a law firm in Panama, Mossack Fonseca, were leaked to the public, and it revealed that a lot of people, including some high government officials in countries around the world, had been using tax loopholes and various kinds of means of tax avoidance, using offshore companies, shell companies, while technically legal in most circumstances, are at the very least unseemly, especially when you're a government leader.
I would think most of our government leaders these days are unseemly. I am Dean at DrugTruth.net.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. You can always listen to us live and find our podcasts on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. This is Jamie reminding you our outro music is Better Man from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Cowtown Conversations on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Monday Morning Medicine Show with Dr. Mike, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.